All right, this is Coleman Stein. We're in Stillwater, Oklahoma. It's April the 29th, Sunday, and it is 1:23 p.m. I'm here with Mrs. Kim Tran, and we're going to be talking about her life in Vietnam and coming to America. And so just to get started, I just wanted to go ahead and start off with some biographical information and talk about, you know, when you were born and where.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am. My mother is a widow. Yeah, her husband died when she pregnant my big sister, and then the father died, and my mother raised the child alone. My father passing by. My father was traveling as a businessman. He traveled, drive small town, that where he friendly, but then he met mom. And mom's a good looking woman, but dad is not. That's okay, man. But dad have a study in him, and mom need a man, so they marry. I the first child between mom and dad. And little about 10 brothers and sisters we have it. And then that married and that moved to where my mom lived. And then he business grow, so he moved in a bigger town, big province. And then later on, he buy a couple factory in my country, which he make ice to provide for fishermen. You're talking about 50 years ago, you don't have an ice factory in everywhere. You had to go big factory where you make ice. You can buy ice so you can take out in a bowl. You can eye on the fish to bring it in, and that he sell eye for commercial, for a lot, for look like a restaurant. You don't have a refrigerator to make eye. You have to come to our factory and buy it. And that really successful here on about 3-4. And then on top of that, he buy on merchandise good, look like a dry good, look like a everything, beans and everything, then take it to Saigon and sell it and bring things from Saigon to the town. By the time that I about 4 years old, 5 years old, that stable enough that he can give us a good life. And I grown up, my country stuck that I remember when I about 8 years old, 9 years old. That's the first time I knew that we had a war, because one of the teacher, the Viet Cong, come and shot him in a class. So my father moving us in a city, because we have money, because that's it, we don't sell, we don't see that. But even Vietnam had war, I never live in a war zone. I always live a very sheltered life, because we always live where the war cannot get it, where the city is. And so at times go on, my childhood is a happy one. We live close to the ocean, so I go to the ocean almost every day. I love ocean. I love reading. And we have Tudor, the Tudor comes to house, and we have a look like a, we at home in any given day, we have about 3 maids and 1 cook. And myself, at 16 years old, the maid had to help me to bathing and make sure that everything proper. My mother with so many children, I think the maid will help me as a grown up woman, since you know, how her boyfriend and everything, she told me don't have boy no good and everything like that. At grown up, the maid more than mom. And then when I 18, of course, in my country you have a level, you have to pass it. One really big debt. You finish high school and here you can go to college. In my country, not you, the whole country will take a test in the same day. And if you don't pass that, if you're a boy and that time, then you have to join the army. If you pass, then you can go to college. Or you do what you want. But otherwise, if you fail, for sure you have to join the army. And the government, if you fail, you go home. So that's really big test. And I thank God that I passed the first time. So I go to Saigon, continue my education. And that in Saigon, that where that I I never involved the war. I never protest. I never anything. I look at life, look like I live in a Boston life. I don't see the use of that. The government will do whatever the government do. And what you say is not, and a lot. Yeah, you say okay, but for how long? And so at 1975, that's when I third year pre-law. And then Saigon fall at April. And as we grown up, that become head of Red Cross in my, not for the whole country, but my hometown, that's the Red Cross. So at 1975, when Viet Cong take over Saigon, take over Vietnam, the U.S. government and everybody, every group of office, Vietnam official, they all really know. I mean, the thing I get mad, my country fate is not designed by us. Decided by the few government official, decided by the U.S. government. So you make a deal, and we have to live with it, that what we like it or not. And so by April, everybody put the gun down, and the Viet Cong have their tongue go to CD, and I never forgot I was living in Saigon. And there's a baseball field on the way home, and I never forget that the legend tell me, and I believe it, that 500 Vietnamese Green Berets blow themselves up in that field because they don't want to go to the camp. And they closed, first thing they closed law school because the council, we don't need law here, so they closed school, law school. So I come in home. And I come in home, but I met my husband, his family even more wealthy than my family in law school, and we decided to get married so I can stay in Saigon. Because you have to have reason to stay in Saigon. You don't let you stay in Saigon. They send everybody from country because now the country have no war anymore, so there's no reason you stay. So everybody go home in the country to build their life. But I don't want, I still want to stay in Saigon. So I met my husband, we fell in love, so I got my ex-husband, so of course I stayed in Saigon. And after 5 years, I knew, I never want to stay. The reason, but I have no choice. See, my father, 2 days before Saigon take over the country, the Viet Cong take over country, the Red Cross tell my dad he have a plane on an airplane, take the family out of the country. But my mother refused because she said, I knew when I come to United States, I don't have mate, I cannot work without my mate. So mom decided not to go, so dad stayed with mom. And so on my little sister and brother, I have one younger brother, Tuan, he 1 year younger than me. Then he left the country with my older brother on a ship. But my ex-husband was my boyfriend at that moment. He have one play and another play and I had, so we decide we don't go because we cannot go together, so we decide we stay. So we stay, we got married and things getting works. After 5 years, and the marriage have a lot of problem too, and I think the best, if I take the children come to United States, and my husband stay back. And when I left, I leave on April 1980. After 5 days, 5 nights, and six nights and 5 days, an ocean, we reached to Philippine shore. It was hot that time. I was a group of 21 or 23 people, it was a long time. I remember they called us a group. And we on giant women have a couple of men, and we are one of the few lucky when you. That's why people said, you know, you live in a refugee camp, you don't know what your life is. And at America now I live it. See, I understand how immigration want to come here because I have a lot of people living in a camp with me. They're willing to stay 10 years to get to United States. And look like the government now, the Trump government, they think that the come to United States, a lot of bad people come. No, to vet the people come to United States have the most difficult to get here, more than any country in the whole world. Very difficult. France, Australia, New Zealand, they real easy. You come sign up. American, you have to be educated. Why you come to United States? Do you have any reality or not? You cannot just say, okay, we have a few freshmen, you want to come here because you think they're the children. You can never come, you have finally had to go to another country. So if the Trump government that the people come here, everywhere you cannot do 100%, and sometimes people come here, but you look at it, the people come, immigration is not the one who kill people here. The people in here kill people in here. Look at Tim McVeigh. So if you blame for immigration, that's wrong. But American, look at from Albert Einstein, who is the German? You get the bad people in here. And you invest the bad in the country. That under Obama, I don't care who's the president. I want the president who wants the best for the country. And out of any president, I think Obama really won. He make a mistake, nobody is perfect, but he wants the best for American. He want to keep the bed in his country. He said, if you come to this country, you learn, you should stay here to work. Because you use a bad mind to advance the country. But if you don't use that, the country stop. Losing, we cannot compete with another country. But that's how I see it. And I came here at when I left the country, I have three kids. I have two boys and pregnant. My daughter. My daughter born in Philippines. And after 2 months, they allow me to come to United States. I come to United States at 81. February 81, I remember. December 13, 1980, that was my daughter born. And we came here. And we came here, and I still thinking go to school, go to college, go to law school. My brother Andre stay in Stillwater. The reason why I come to Stillwater, because my brother was a college, was a grad school at OSU in chemical engineering. And when I come to the camp, one of my friend, professor, I contact with him, and he said, go to French. But my brother said, come to United States, you never regret it. Your children can go to school. But you always go where the family is. So I come to United States. What even now that I think that's the best decision I ever make in my life. After I see all my children successful, then I think I make a lot of mistakes in my life, but that's one of the things that I proud. I make a right decision, come here. And when I came here, life was hard. With single mother raising three kids because my sister had to go to college. She go to OU and my brother get a job somewhere else, so I stay here. Then I lucky I get a job at the factory. I work 60 hours a week on my line. 40 hours basic, 20 hours overtime. And during summer, my sister will take, they live in Norman, they go to school, they will take the children during summer so I can work more hours so I can ride. And my son and I were talking another day, and I said, "Was you guys, during summer, you guys go on vacation?" My son said, "Mom, we don't go to vacation. We go stay relatives so you can work. Go to vacation when the whole family go together. You mix a plane and you spend money. That's on vacation. Otherwise, you pawn onto your relatives so your mom can work. It's not vacation." So you know, I learned a lot in here. I learned a lot from my children. But one thing about my children growing up with me, you know, a lot of people, they have a trouble raising children. I think I'm one of the few lucky. I don't have that problem. My son said, I never can understand, come home and tell my mom, oh, I don't want to go to college. So quite a few people tell me that I'm a good mother. I said, no, I'm not a good mother. I have good children, make me look good, but not me.
Yes, ma'am. So, I mean, if we could, do you think we could talk more about your childhood? Mm-hmm. You said that you grew up not really realizing that you were in a a war zone?
Yeah, no, I know. No, no, I knew that there was a war going on because, and I think when I tell you, on Tet at 1969, that when they shoot everywhere, even in city we are bombing, and we go up, wake up, and bomb everywhere. And my father said we had to go to country, and we have people who work for us, live in country, so we come to one of the employee to stay. And they were very kind, we stayed with them for 2-3. That's when I really, then when it hit home. And I still remember now, we all had to, my father, a lot of people don't do, but we had my name tagged on here with my name and who my veteran is in case if I die. Then you can find the parents, so you can bring a body or something. Or sometimes when I come home from Saigon, go to school from Saigon, sometimes if I fly then I don't see it. That sometimes if I take a bus, then I can see on. See, my country very beautiful. We are along the coast, so you can see when you drive the bus on a road, you can look at on left side, right side, you will see the coconut field, and another side will be the ocean. And you can see on the coconut have a bullet in it. So you know that the war get it. But to tell you the truth, I never see hand-in-hand combat. They do it out, or look like some of the soldiers now come to eat, U.S. vet, talk to me the town that they buy bass, and I never heard about the town. But they do because that's where in a country where the U.S. come to fight, and my dad, he owned the factory in Zem. I remember in a few, that maybe that was the Viet Cong accused him. He say, hey, because you have some of the U.S. when you come, some U.S. official come and ask to buy all the whole. Now you guys have money. By on the eye from us because there are people the soldier needed. But my father said, no, I cannot, but I can sell you 20%. That on you can have it, 80% will be for my people. And in my country, it was really, really hard. And I do not allow to go to the factory. The factory at one place and with a manager, and we live a different, but every now and then, if I had to go get that, my mom send me, then I run to get that. Then I can buy that and I can see a GI. It's so funny, you will buy the eye block. We have eye block like that. And you will pick it up, put on a top, and lay on it because it's so hard. And then through the paper, through the news, through the TV, we hear the war going on. And everything there, people die. I grown up, I have one cousin. My father, brother's son, he come to visit us. He about 10 years old or 7 years. He in the army, he come to visit us. He's really nice guy. I was a 7th, 8th grade, and he took me out to eat and everything. And one day, I come home and her dad said he died. He was, the grenade blow kill him. That's the most close home that I heard. And then I go to college. And then the neighbor, you have 3 children, 2 boys, two girls and 1 boy. The man about 6-7 years older than me, and he's on the army, and he get killed. And I see the funeral, that's when I realized, but I never see anything except Rick on paper and the by close to 75, after Saigon, phone. I never realized that some of them, my neighbor worked for Viet Cong, gave them the information we don't even know. And I heard that, one of the colonel, he was a Viet Cong, and he didn't know he had children and everything when Saigon phone. She left and took the children. He go to education camp when he find out who she, he kill himself. I mean the country get work when Saigon, because everybody heard how bad Viet Cong. So he tried to kill himself, and then they took over that, I married with my ex-husband, his family, we We live in the house on the Juliana Street in Saigon. Eight of us who get married have one floor. That you're talking about childhood, but then I'm talking about time when I grown up, but when about my childhood, it's not much. I go to school. I had tutor. The tutor come by the house and tutor me on math and English. No, not English, in French, tutor until when I, and then every now and then I heard that even my town, the army, the U.S. Army do not allow to take the tank in town. The people can go in town. Every now and then we can see the GI come in town and everything. People, all that, have a couple U.S. come over to the house to talking about buying ice. So they're looking for that, and I think that have a couple meal with them at the house. But more than that, I don't see anything more than normal childhood here. Except you hear people die, but in here too.
So. Yes, ma'am. So, you mentioned that you had neighbors who worked for the Viet Cong.
The neighbor, we don't know the guy down the street. He was he looked like a village. He not a doctor, but he looked like more than a nurse. He gives shot and everything. He's a Viet Cong. He worked for Viet Cong. That he's the one who tell Viet Cong that that work for U.S. government, but it's not, you never know, he always jealous because we live on same street, but we have a real comfortable life. And before he moved in that street, his daughter want to go to school, she didn't move in. She come to stay with us for a few months, we let her stay with us. Then we didn't know until later on, my mother, you know, people will tell, my mother find out he's the one who tell that go get that. And they took away our home at 1975 when the Viet Cong came in over. They took at night, they get that first, that on the way from Saigon, go visit me in home. And they took that and that that tell, stop somebody that go home, please tell my wife, they send on the thing out, it mean on the asset. But my mother wasn't trust anybody, so she won't send asset to anybody, she hide in the house. Well, in a million years, we never know that they kicked us out of the house. They took over the house. So we get out, and they took mom in jail. And for mom said for a whole month, they asked her where does she hide the money, how much money. They said my brother was in the United States at that point. He left at 1975, remember? So, you know, you don't know that the neighbors of Viet Cong, they turn you in and everything like that. They take away, they take over our house. So you give a mom a different house.
Yes, ma'am. And so you said that you went to the Philippines in 1980?
Yeah, 1980. Yeah, I think I stay in Philippines. I come to, came from Zambales. I don't know, but then we were allowed to United States. We didn't know the American live there, have a base there. We didn't know. We were thinking we come to Philippines because where I go, it will be the safest. And we didn't know until when they came here that 100 people out of the country escaped out by sea. Only 2 people make it alive. 98 people die on the ocean. I have a friend, her son died. Because you lack water and food on when you know look like a, when my father heard that everybody want to come to you, everybody after Saigon for 1975, everybody want left the country, both one acre political, but the second one economic, the country, they know you have better life in another country, so they left. But you don't know that you go in a boat, you die. Nobody knows that. They only hear, so my dad he have when he had money, he helping a lot of people, and that guy we help him a lot. So he come and tell dad, he said he going to leave the country, but he needs some money to leave it for his mom. So we pay him some money, I think about $10,000 per person. With that on the money, I have it for my children, and then If I lost it, I don't have any more money. And then he set it up, and when we saw the, we go at 9, at April 30, that's when the Viet Cong separate the victory over Vietnam. So they don't watch it at all. Because you watch by the shoreline really closely, because everybody escaped. For what I understand, I heard that if they caught you, they will shot you right there in the head, or they get you an education camp. And I didn't tell anybody of it. I said, if I in a boat and they caught me, I will throw my children in the ocean and ram in, because I'm not going to get caught by the Viet Cong. I cannot go to education camp. And I don't know what happened to my children's life. So I only thinking, it don't have to come to that drama. But I always have a plan B. What happened to plan B? I don't, cannot be succeed. What you going to do? So.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, that's, I have to say, that's really brave to be able to risk all of that to find a better life.
Brave may be the not you just don't want to live with Viet Cong, so everything is better. And you didn't know that if you go, they will kill you and everything. But you, the one thing I heard in America, which said, it never happened to me. So it happened to everybody else, but it never happened to me. So it, maybe I'm okay. You know, you always hope like that. And I am one who's lucky that I am okay, that I make it. Because my before, my ex-husband and I decided to go together. It can never go together, so we decided. Whoever can go will go. If he has a chance to go by himself, he will go. I have a chance to go by myself, to go. He go 5 times. Each time I send him up, he go back home. He lucky they didn't caught him. The plan before he go to the ocean. And after I left, my father, he get caught. They put him in camp for 3 years. My father had to go visit him. And on behalf of my son, my children, But yeah, it's really difficult and everything.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. And so, so you mentioned, you know, you worked, or you came to America, and it was really hard to get in. I mean, what was your first thought, or what were some of your first experiences here after you got in?
My first experience, how. I cannot speak English. I'm done. That's my first thing. I'm done. How can I'm living and driving car? I knew because and the first thing I came here, I come to Stillwater. You have to remember, I live in Saigon, where you have Louis Vuitton, you have Chanel. I wear clothes out body mask. I wear clothes well, fashion out the even when Saigon. You have to remember that. So anywhere in the country, if you are a college student, you go with fashion. And my parents have money, so I wear the top fashion. I was talking about Chanel Hammett, about Lock Renfield, about I written Barry Mash, L. So with mini skirt, I was a mini skirt girl and everything. So when I came here to Oklahoma, and I said, where is it? Why we get here? And I asked my brother, I said, where everybody? I don't see everybody in town. He said, this is Montau Kim. He don't walk, he driving. Because I live in Saigon, we drove motorcycle, we walk everywhere. Look like in France, we walk everywhere. We like it. We go to law school, and we walk over to the library, we go walk over the coffee. We all have a motor scooter. A few, but I have a cousin who's a general. So he have a car. My dad have a car. So we ride, but I still ride more motorbike, and then go everywhere like that. So when I came here the first time, I said, I never heard. But to tell you the truth, I never heard Oklahoma until my brother live here. I talking we will come to California. New York, some big town that you live in, that's where you hear. Who hear about Oklahoma? Oklahoma to the foreigner, it's nothing. So when I came here, I don't see people and everything like that. and I cannot speak English to save my life. I learn English. I have a two. My daughter was 2 months old, and you have a glad. Remember then you have a lot of refugee camp. Refugee came here, so you have program and everything. Church, you have everything. A lot of church sponsor Vietnamese people. I want don't have a church sponsor because my brother here, so I don't have to go to church to feel obligated or anything. But you have so my brother enrolled me one of the English class. But I go for 2 hours, and my daughter cried so much, and my brother couldn't handle. So he said, "That's it." So I stay home. I learn how to do TV, watch the read English, watching TV, or guessing. The only thing that I like reading book. So I read any little book, kid book, and everything book, and then I learn from there. Then I go to work, and my first job I work in a quiet cafe there more than a drink car, the woman pushing drink car. I was 26, but people, when I was really young at 26, people were thinking I'm 16, 17. When I told them I had 3 kids, they said, "How old were you when you had kids 10 years old?" I said, "No, because when I small, and at 26, I pray young, so everybody don't believe it. I have 3 children. And then I have the little car that I had to put around each table. Ask them, do you want to refill coffee or tea and everything like that. Like when I met one of the gentlemen, he worked at McCruiser, he's the head of human resource. So he said, "Why don't you go apply for a job?" See, at one point, I was a customer. I go to restaurant, I expect them to treat nice. So when I work in a restaurant, I treat people very nice because I know how I want to be treated. So when I come to Guayet, that's a cafe there, but I treat them look like a restaurant. I talk to customers really nice. So customers really like me. I could not believe it. During Christmas, I get a lot of gifts. And a lot of people now, I look in at your kindness. When they leave, they will come to, they give me the tip on my hand. They said, "Make sure don't let the hostess get it because she hot, she don't share with me." So they really, really nice. And I work in Guayet, I think about 6 months. And my brother don't agree for me to go to work. My brother really old fashioned. He want me to stay home to take care of my children. But where I get it, I don't want to go on welfare. One thing I really proud. I always think we should have a welfare because that helps people. I believe it. I lucky that I don't use that. But I think we should have that. I don't think because that helps people who fall down. And then I go to work in a factory. And when I work there, when I work at cafeteria, it was a $3.50. When I go to work at McCruiser, $7.50, so double. And I work in cafeteria, $20. And the 20 hour I work in factory, you know, had to be 40 hours, had to be full time. And then I saw people working extra hour. That's when you ask, you get time half. Or I said, "You work same job and you get that much?" And they said, "Yeah." And they said, "If you work Sunday, you will get that much." So I volunteer. If nobody want to do, it doesn't matter. I will work. I don't care what job it is. I will work. My goal is to bring as much money home for my children. Yeah, so. And I raise my children. The last one go get out from a cruiser, go to college. Every one of them go to college, they go over to you. And the only one go to grad school, that Luan, he go to UAB. And he finished his PhD there.
Yes,
but life was hard, yes.
Yeah. Now you said your son works in bioengineering?
Now I think he worked for Celgene. He's the marketing for Celgene now.
Okay.
But he's a microbiology.
Oh, okay.
Microbiology,
yes,
yeah. And he have a PhD at UAB. And I have another son who live in New York. He's in advertising. And have my daughter, the one who born in Philippines. She's married, she live in Florida. She work for Manpower. I don't know, you hear that company that staffing on Manpower. She's a She worked for them, so everybody have a good job and everything.
Yes, ma'am. Now, so I mean, your restaurant. When, I guess, like, when did you decide to open it?
We work at MacRuza. I work at MacRuza, and Stanley come in. Stanley, by the end of MacRuza, Stanley come in for about 2 years before we closed down. He worked at the TAM. So I really did not want to dating at the time. My life was good. My children was get out and everything. But my son, that he said he want me to. He said, if you leave, you, I want you dating with you, need someone, you cannot live by yourself. If not, you have to move close with us. I said, okay. So I told them, I told my children, I said, if I see someone, I will bring it. You guys will decide it. Because I said, if you don't like it, I said, okay, forget it, because I don't really care. So my children, they met Stanley, they like him. And then MacRuza Claude and Stanley told me, I sell food. When I work at MacRuza, I make egg roll. People love my egg roll, so I make egg roll. I sell egg roll at work. I cook food at work. Stanley saw me bring food. At night, I cook food. I sell on Monday. That's the end of MacRuza when they close the cafeteria. People don't have food to eat. Eat out junk out of cafeteria. So I bring food. I sell. I still remember. I sell $5 per meal. $5. And I have on kind. I have, and I sell Monday, Wednesday and Friday. They play orders the day before. So I only know exactly how many meals I had to prepare. I make pretty good money on it. And when my children already get out of college. So Stanley, we don't know because we in the late 50. We don't know that they open another factory at MacRuza. I don't want to go work for Armstrong. I don't want another factory life because I would another layoff. And I'm old too, I don't think they will hire me. And so what option we have? Stanley said, you can cook. Why don't you cook? And I have a little money. And by then I learned how to do trading stock. I did pretty good though. I did on trading stock. I buy Facebook, I buy everything. So I said, well, maybe I do that. But then Stanley said, why don't you? And Stan's idea is the opener because he really liked my egg roll. He said, why don't you look like a curly, dirty curly? He said, get a little car like that and sell egg roll fried rice. And I sell egg roll fried rice at work. I told him, no, you cannot sell enough to make a living. Nobody order a couple hundred egg roll a day. So you, if you want, you have to have a whole meal. So the next thing we know, we buy the food, the truck. So Stanley tell me what exactly. I tell him what I going to cook. So he asked me, so he... that we have our food truck, we make specially for us. And we have them built in Georgia and delivery to us. So but you don't know what you need, so we usually order that, but there are a couple things we don't use that on the food truck at all, look like the grill. We don't grill a hamburger, so we don't cook that. I don't want to cook my fry on that thing, it's too large, too much. The flavor cannot, when you cook small, you have a control of flavor. When you cook too big, I don't like that. So that's what her food truck happened. And when we start, I have saving everything, but when we start a food truck, when the first day we open, we have $5 an hour and a business account. And we build that up from ground, look like everything else. And we don't know what people like. Because I always question, am I really good cook? If the day, if today customer don't show up, I said, maybe I'm not good cook. Then 2 days later, we're really busy, and I wonder why. I wish I had confidence that my food good no matter what customer when it will come. So that's good. But
yes, ma'am. Mm. I mean, I really love the food. Like the chicken by me, that's my favorite.
Yeah, that's all there's a mine. You like chicken banh mi, right? Yeah, she like it a lot. Mm-hmm. But see, the thing is, I cook you what I eat. Everything on that menu, that's what I like the most. That's what I put on the menu because I think if I like it, people will like it. And I cook look like I cook for my children. I cook the meal, not things that I got cut or anything like that. It doesn't matter, so.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Well, you see, I think that's all the topics that I had written down. You know, to cover. Are there any other experiences or life experiences you'd like to share? Or?
No, I think I take too much of your time. I think.
Oh, no.
No, yeah. But if you have any question, draw on a big paper. If I read it, and if anything, I tell you. If you have come up with something you need more, you stop by here and give it to me, and I tell you what time so I can answer that. But for right now, I think we probably cover almost everything, don't you think?
Yes, ma'am.
If you won't have any more questions, then I answer you.
Let's see. Well, I don't have any more questions right now, but, you know, we could always...
Yeah, that's what I said. If you have any more questions, anything like that, I'm more than happy to give you that. But I think I talked your ear up already.
Oh, no, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I've had a good time. And I really appreciate you, you know, sitting down and taking
time
out of your day.
No problem. Yeah, I really don't have a time, but I think Stan really liked you, and we really don't give interview a lot, but we're hard to say no to people with the tie, hard for to say no. But we have the guy who from the our college, he come the year before, and he asked, and we give him interview. And last year somebody come and we said, no, we don't give it to you anymore because you got kicked. He come back, talk to that guy, so that guy did come back and write really good article about it. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you again. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and press...